Let's cut the unnecessary, right? So is it necessary for me to type out a 4-page report when a 15-minute phone call might suffice? Right? So there are different opportunities here to simplify.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Anne Gomez. Here's three facts that I think you should know about her. One, she is the founding president of Clear Concept Inc., an international training organization. Anne is also a speaker and best-selling author. Her latest book is called Workday Warrior, A Proven Path to Reclaiming Your Time, which is a non-renewable resource. Two, Anne and her team have been training many of the world's busiest people for close to 2 decades, helping them thrive at work. And three, Anne is a recovering workaholic, and calls herself patient number one when it comes to benefiting from all the lessons she teaches. Anne Gomez, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you today and excited to find out what we're going to learn about how do we become a workday warrior.
Awesome.
And tell me, what does that mean? Does that mean it's a battle out there and we need a battle mentality?
So some people do feel like they have to have this battle mentality with their work. It feels like a grind. It feels difficult. It feels impossible. It feels like onerous. And that's not what I believe we all deserve. I believe we deserve to be in flow with our work and to be like a warrior who is almost mystical watching them. Like they bring such finesse to what they do. And so on the contrary, I want work to be so much easier. Work tends not to be easy for driven people because, you know, like George, you and I, we chatted about this prior to this podcast. Driven people tend to fill up their plate and take on new challenges. And that isn't easy. But we can make work easier like a warrior and be more in flow and have this great experience. That's what I believe we all deserve.
I'm curious about the inner conversation there that the warrior has. How do we set ourselves up to become more productive and more warrior focused without being warlike?
Yeah, well, I think there are three things that we need to do, and I outlined them in my book, and they combat the three biggest challenges that get in people's way, that overcomplicate our days, that make work harder than it needs to be. And I'm happy to walk you through those three things, George.
Please do. Yes, you've teased us. You've got to tell us now.
Okay, so the first step is to clarify what is most important. Too many people are trying to do too many things. I was one of those people for many years. So what I hear is people say, oh, I have too many priorities. I don't have enough time to go around. And it's true that most people are spreading themselves too thin. And so this obviously is a conversation you'd want to have with your team, with your leader, to make sure you're all clear on the core priorities. But it's really important to know what your top priorities are and what your future priorities are. And there's a difference here. There's a ton of great ideas out there. There's no end in sight of things we can spend our time on. We just need to define what are we doing now versus later. And that later could be a week from now, a month from now, a year from now. Like, you decide what's appropriate for you. But in terms of core priorities, there's a magic number of three. Three core priorities. And this is not discrete tasks. This is projects. So one of my core priorities is serving clients. And that I dedicate about half of my week to serving clients. So it's a big category of work. And I often have many clients on the go. I'll wrap up one project and take on another. So it's not like it's one task. There's multiple tasks in that core priority, right? Leaders often have their team as another core priority. Sales and marketing might have business development activities as part of their core priorities. And this is not just one task, it's a bucket of work, it's a category of work. But when we think about our work in that way, we start to get more strategic about what we're saying yes to right now. So that's the first thing, to be clear on your top priorities.
Before you go on to the next one there, I'm hearing there is that the priority is not not a task, but it's a theme. It's a direction. It's a project.
Yes. And that should have a goal also, that project. So for me, with our client work, the goal is to create outstanding training experiences, the kind that make a client say, wow, right? That is the goal. And that's what the metric we hold ourselves against with every training project that we manage.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And tell us about the next priority or the next step there.
So the second step is to combat this not enough time syndrome that so many of us have. And the strategy is to pay yourself first. So once we know what our core priorities are, then we want to block that time in our calendar before other things get in the way. So we've heard this concept, pay yourself first with financial resources. Now we're applying that same principle to our time, our limited resource, right? Like, as you said, can't make more time. We get our 24 hours. So how are we spending it? And so we want to be very proactive about building routines around our core priorities and then leaving the leftovers for all of those other things. So for example, protect focus work time. Most of us need to have time for independent work that doesn't include email, chats, informal conversations, like independent work to build a document, edit a spreadsheet, whatever that may be. And so we want that time to be uninterrupted. When our alerts are off, minimize email, minimize chat, whatever it may be, close our door and focus. And we want to give our prime energy to that task, right? So for most people, that's early in the morning. Early in the morning, it would vary based on your own chronobiology, right? So the morning hours, I try not to book meetings before 11 a.m. for that reason. And then we want to be clear on how much time do we have available each week for meetings so that we're not giving away all of our own time. And there's one final aspect of our days that many people forget about, which is those informal communications. And people may find they're booked back to back. They might go in and block time in their calendar, but they're booked back to back. And they finish their day and they think, well, why didn't that go to plan? And it's because there's usually about two-ish hours, and it varies by role, obviously, of informal communications, chats, emails, hallway conversations that are part of our day, an important part of our day. And so we need to leave that wiggle room in our day for those informal communications.
And I'm hearing there the danger of being booked back to back. One, you're always running and you're always late for the next meeting and you're not prepared and you're always feeling always feeling drained.
Yeah, yeah. We're not built to be on all the time. So in terms of preparing for meetings, we need that independent focus time in our day, in our week. And not every day has to look the same, but I encourage you to build routines, not just to reinvent the wheel every day, but to know this is what my Monday looks like. This is what my Tuesday looks like. And to build those routines, and of course you can be flexible, but to build those routines around having protected time for focus, having time for meetings and having time for the inevitable follow-up that needs to happen, the emails, the phone calls, et cetera. And then in terms of being booked back to back, this happens with a lot of leaders. And what I encourage a lot of organizations to do is to reset the 30 and 60 minute time slots. If we even went as simple as 25 and 15 minute meetings, one, we'll cover the same amount of content because work expands to fill the time allotted, right? Pareto's principle. By the 50 and 25 minute allocation, we give ourselves time to get up and stretch, rest our brain, go to the washroom, get a glass of water. And the way to make this work is to start the meetings after the hour. So if it's a half an hour meeting, start it at 5 minutes after the hour. If it's an hour meeting, start it at 10 minutes after the hour. And this means that we inevitably stop at the top or the bottom half of the hour. But if we start and expect to end early, we tend to keep talking because we all like to talk.
And I like that concept. I certainly like the concept of having 25-minute or 50-minute meetings, but I hadn't considered moving the start time away from the hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good little trick.
Yeah, because now we're looking, because we look at the, we're watching the clock and we're looking at, oh, okay, it's 10:02, so I got another 10 minutes. No, we're supposed to end now.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you and I had a meeting that went from 1 to 1:50, I'm quite sure you don't have another meeting at 1:50. So I might feel inclined to say, oh, George, one more thing. But if our meeting goes 1:10 to 2, there's a good chance you have something else going on at 2, or I do for that matter.
I like that. I'm going to use that.
Excellent.
And tell us what else.
Okay, so the third strategy to optimize your productivity is to simplify. So we like to call the tool associated with the strategy the simplify filter, which sounds pretty fancy, but it's really about running everything on your list through the filter of, can I simplify? And there's three ways to simplify. We can streamline, we can scale back, and we can seek help. And each of those have a number of different strategies, right? Like even with seeking help, we can obviously ask for help. We can also accept help when it comes knocking. And this is tough for some people who really like to do it their way and really lean into that perfectionism and that reluctance to delegate, because let's face it, you're probably really good at what you do. And no one probably is quite up to your level because they haven't had your experience. So some people are reluctant to delegate for that reason. And we have to reframe the support we're getting. Not can someone do it as well as I can, but can someone help me get some or all of the way there? Can I train someone? Right? And the answers to these questions are yes. So we really want to broaden our perspective about how we seek help.
And you're right. It's easy to be reluctant to delegate because, I've been doing this for a long time. I know how to do it. I know how I want it done. They can't do it. They can't do it like I can.
Yeah. And the first time, you're right. Right. Like if we only thought about the first time, then the most effective model is to do it ourselves. And what I always like to say is delegating is a long-term play. Mm. So we want to think about the second, third, fourth, fifth iteration. And at this point, they're off to the races and they may be doing it better than you can. One, they may have more capacity. They may bring a fresh perspective. You're now able to free up your time to work on other things. So there's a lot of benefits to delegating. I don't think anyone doubts that. But it's so important to think of delegating as a long-term play.
And I can see the wisdom there, because if I give this job to Anne, well, she's never done it before. I'm only going to have to go over it again with her after. I can't be bothered. Let's just get it done myself. And that's fine if it only needs to be done once in our lifetime.
Exactly. You got it. Yeah. What we want to do is we want to think like a multiplier. We want to think about how can we get more done in less time? And doing it ourselves the same way all over and over and over again isn't that strategy. So there are ways that we can automate, we can simplify tasks, right? We can scale back what's needed, right? So there are like lean manufacturing is all about, let's cut the unnecessary. Right. So is it necessary for me to type out a 4-page report when a 15-minute phone call might suffice? Right. So there are different opportunities here to simplify. That is.
On the delegation part, what can we do so that the person or persons that we delegate to do have a better chance of getting there faster?
So I talk about the ART framework, the art of delegating, assign, review, teach. So first up front, we have to set them up for success. Give them context. If they've never done it before, here's an example you could reference. Here's the reason why. Here is the ultimate goal. Like we want to provide all the who, what, why, when, how information to set them up for success. It's not just flipping an email. Hey, George, best of luck, right? So we want to have that conversation. Then we want to book some interim reviews. So we want to give people enough time for success. If we delegate something the day before it's due, there's not a lot of time for back and forth. We might find, oh, it's just faster to do it myself. So we want to really get ahead of the curve here and assign people work when there's time for them to work on it. And then book a review and reviews, like a meeting, serves as a great deadline. So if you and I are working on something together, I would encourage us to book an interim review. And so let's say, okay, well, how's Tuesday? Could we look over the draft on Tuesday? And at that point, there's an opportunity to help them bring it up to the level that you want them to be at, right? So you could say, okay, well, I'm looking at this draft. Let's change this. Let's modify this. I really like what you did here. And you give some feedback. They go away. They work on it again. You have another review on Thursday. And obviously the pace and the frequency of these reviews will depend on their experience, right? So you want to, we're not micromanaging here. We're supporting the development of other people.
And so what I'm hearing there is that the first time or times that we delegate a particular task to a person, we actually follow the progress of it or help them through the progress.
Yeah, we've assigned responsibility, but we're still accountable for the most part. So we want to really make sure that the work is done at the quality it needs to be done, not at perfection levels, but at the quality level it needs to be done. So that upfront assignment, then the interim reviews during which we teach, right? We're giving some feedback. Here's what I liked. Here's what would make it even better. And that really sets them up for success. So yes, you're putting in a lot of time during that upfront one. The same, if not more time than if you just did it yourself. But we're thinking about the second, third, fourth iteration here, because they will get faster and require less of your input each time.
What else does the Workday Warrior need to attack?
Okay, so in the second part of the book, when I talk about fortifying boundaries and paying yourself first, I talk a lot about focusing instead of multitasking. There is so easy to be interrupted in today's day and age. I mean, we are bombarded with alerts and tempting rabbit holes to dive into. And it's so important for us to take control of our day and to minimize our interruptions. So we used to be interrupted. You go back a generation, maybe people were interrupted every 30, 45, 60 minutes. Now we are bombarded every minute or every nanosecond for some people. And so it's important for us to say, well, I'm not going to let the tail wag the dog here. I'm going to silence my alerts on all devices, my watch, my phone, my computer, right? And I'm going to minimize the things that distract me, right? Chats, email, while I'm working on something else. And I'm not going to ignore my email for 7 hours, but I might park it for 45 minutes while I'm focusing on something. And I'll get great quality work done at a faster pace because I'm focusing, and I'll also feel less stress. So there's many benefits of focusing, and this is all supported by research. And then I will go over to email. And even if it's been 45 minutes, that's not that long. Right, George, if I responded to your email 45 minutes later, would I need to say, George, I'm so sorry it's taken me so long to respond? Like, would you think I've just...
Not at all, because I would realize that you've got other things to do.
Yeah, I could be in meetings, right? I'm focusing. There's stuff going on. So we respect that with other people, but we don't give ourselves that same permission to minimize. And then people always say to me, well, what if something urgent comes in? So George, let's play this out. Let's say you need me urgently. You're about to turn on the podcast and I haven't shown up for the interview, which would be really bad as a time management consultant, but let's just say that happened. And you email me and say, Ann, hey, where are you? I'm here on the Zoom. Like, are you coming? And 2 minutes goes by, 5 minutes goes by. I haven't responded. 6 minutes goes by. What are you going to do, George? 7 minutes goes by.
After I wonder what's going on and maybe call you some names that you don't hear. Where the heck is she?
Yeah. And
I would get stressed.
Okay. So 9 minutes goes by, 10 minutes.
I would call you or text you.
Call me. You call me. Or you would text me. And you'd say, Ann, hey, and I would see your name on my call display and I would pick it up. And, you know, assuming I'm healthy and able to pick it up, right? But let's say I just got caught up in my work and I lost track of time. I see your number come through. I call this my safety net. I pick up, oh, George, oh my gosh, am I late for our podcast? Yeah, you are, Ann. Okay, I'm getting on right now. So that phone call is the safety net. That phone call, and normally we don't forget, we don't lose track of time, right? But let's say there was something else where you're going into a meeting and I am happily working on my own stuff. And, you know, unexpectedly you need something. Hey, Ann, can you send that document? I need it like right now. Fine. Call me. Right. And I'll pick up the phone for you, George. And this is true within teams, right? Where we can filter out And we have this safety net that allows us to have this hierarchy to our communication. Now, if you call me about everything, it's like crying wolf, right? So we don't want to overplay texting and calling, but we have this ability to silence our notifications and carve out focus time and still let the urgent messages come through. This is what people sometimes forget. And so they leave email open on a second screen all day long. They're interrupted all day long and they're not getting focused work done.
And I suppose that we need to realize that the different methods that we communicate with each other has different senses of urgency.
Absolutely.
I'm generally okay with email. If I hear back the same day, generally, I'm okay. I mean, like, that's quite fine. And again, it depends but when I call you, if I'm calling you, I want you to pick up.
Yeah. And I would if I'm not in a meeting. But, you know, if I get a phone call right now in the middle of recording this podcast with you, I'm not going to pick up the phone. I'm not going to be like, oh, George, hold on. Just hold that thought. Like, oh, hey, hi, mom. Yeah. Sunday dinner sounds good. I'm not going to do that. So why don't we bring that same respect to our own focus work? When I'm working on building a document, then I want to focus on that for half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever that may be, 20 minutes, an hour, right? I'm not going to focus on it for 6 hours. That's not how our brain works. We start to fade after between 90 to 120 minutes. That's at the high end. I think most of us start to fade after 30, 45 minutes because we're not used to focusing. We're used to being interrupted constantly. And that's a big dopamine surge, right? The temptation associated with checking alerts, according to research, is stronger than the temptation associated with nicotine and alcohol. We are very tempted by alerts. So people say, oh, I just keep that little box that pops up in my bottom right corner and I'm fine. I just glance over. And I always push back, like, really? Really? It doesn't interrupt you. So let's say your top client sends you a message and it says, hey, George, can you give me a call when you get a chance? And you glance over and you think, well, okay, well, I'll finish this document. And I'll call in about half an hour. So you go over to the document. What are you thinking about now?
You're thinking about what the client wants. Should I get back to him even sooner?
Yeah, exactly. So you're torn, right? Most people just say, oh, I'll just call and find out what's going on. And then you find out it's not an urgent thing, right? Like, they would call if it's urgent. They'll text you. They'll send a drone over your house to find you. Like, there are ways to break through the noise. We don't have to be on email all day long. And most teams would agree. And they'd, like you said, say, we're happy if people respond within the day. Some teams want a more timely response within the hour or two. It depends on what's happening, right? If the big deal is closing today, we want a faster response. But then we're not having as much time where we're carving out in creation mode on those days. So we have to kind of balance this based on what's happening during the day. But at a minimum, we can take 20 minutes to focus. And that doesn't mean emails come in the second I minimize email. They come in randomly. And so on average, if I take 20 minutes to focus, then any messages that have come in during that time have been sitting waiting for me for an average of 10 minutes. And that is okay even on the busiest day.
And I imagine that in the workplace, it's up to the team leader to set these standards and saying, here's our standards of response versus focus.
I think the team leader has a big influence. I think that, with that said, I think we're all leaders and we can all decide to work in the most productive way. Now, if I'm going to take, let's say you're my leader, George, and I'm going to take 20 minutes to focus, I don't even need to tell you because you probably won't even notice. The only thing you'll notice is the quality of my work and my pace is going to go up. But you're going to, if I take 20 minutes to focus and then I check my messages, then I don't need to say to you, oh, George, I'm sorry you had to wait so long. How can I help you? You're going to be like, Anne, calm down. It's all good. If I say, George, I'm going to carve out this morning to focus. I'll check email a few times. If you need me more frequently, give me a call. But I'm not going to take 3 hours without looking at messages. I'll block off 3 hours to focus. But there will be times in there when I will check messages 2, 3, 4 times, let's say. So again, I'm not disappearing for weeks at a time here. Short bursts of focus. And I believe we all have the ability to add more focus time into our day. We can communicate with our leader, but we don't have to wait for our leader to tell us to do that. A lot of people across levels are multitasking right now. So I don't think we need to wait for our leader. It's more influential when our leader says, yes, this is a great way to work. I don't expect you to respond to emails within a nanosecond. I'd like you to be timely, but it doesn't have to be instant. That is effective when a leader does that. And I think all leaders should set that standard. But I think we all can play a role in protecting focus time.
And I can certainly see value in focus time, because I know that when I do get focused, I'm more productive, and I actually feel good at the end of that period. I think, oh, wow, look what I just did. And when I sat down, I didn't have a clue, but now look how much progress I made. But yet, you mentioned the dopamine effect of the interruptions. I also wonder about the emotions involved there. For example, feeling guilty or being afraid not to respond faster, because what if I don't respond fast enough? The boss thinks I'm not responsive.
Yeah. I hear that from people.
So how do people deal with that? How do they rationalize that?
So I'm not encouraging people to wait 2 days to respond to an email. I'm not encouraging that at all. I'm saying take at least 20 minutes to focus on a big, chunky piece of work. And then look at your email. And as you gain confidence and you see that, wow, the world continues to spin, this works. I get great quality work when I focus, is you can start to expand that 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And the other thing I like to say to remind people is that we're not running a call center here, right? It's not about how many emails can you respond to. It's about the quality of your work. And for most of us, it's about getting big things done while also managing all the little things. So we build our day around the big things and the little things fit in. What a lot of people do instead is they do all the little things up front. And where there is free time, they'll put in the big things, but that free time tends not to come. So we need to turn this around, be proactive, pay ourselves first, put the big rocks, the big, your core priority, independent focus work in your calendar first. And then let the other stuff fill in around that. Yeah. And that's usually about 2 hours, the other stuff. And that varies by role, by level. But we still do need about 2 hours for those little things. We just don't want to start our day with those 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And for people who want to find out more about you and the services you provide, they can find you at your website, clearconceptinc.ca, and you can find that link in the description below. They can also find information about your latest book, The Workday Warrior, at the same site as well as on the normal book selling places. And we'll have that link in the description below. And as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a team leader who just seems to be running to keep up because there's a lot happening in their organization, in the industry, if there would be one, two, or three pieces of advice that you might give that team leader to better manage their time and their sanity, what might be that?
I think the first one is really to be clear on what your core priorities are at the team level and at your individual level. This is what we do with any coaching client. We really help them define their core priorities and then build this tool called their main action plan to support that. And so a lot of people just are putting out fires. It's like playing whack-a-mole with all their tasks. And this tool, the main action plan, really helps them be very proactive and strategic about how they're spending their time. But it is all grounded in those three core priorities.
That would be
number one. That is the game changer. And I love helping people build that, especially people with a few years under their belt. The more senior, the better, as far as I'm concerned, because I'll be working with really, really senior executives, CFOs, CEOs, et cetera, managing partners, like really senior people. And I'll say to them, how did you function without this tool before? Let me guess. I bet you're quite smart and you work a ton of hours. And they usually say yes to both of those, right? Without being kind of, they humbly say, yeah, I am smart. But that then compensates for not having this awesome system in place. And we need these great systems to support ourselves. so that we can have this great impact at work and to make work easier, not easy, but make it easier. So that map is a game changer.
Mm. Valuable advice. My guest today is Ann Gomez, reminding you to, when it comes to time, pay yourself first.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.